Coming up on Fronteras, one of the first things newly nationalized citizens do is register to vote.
We get a lot of questions about, how do I sign up to be a nonpartisan or independent?
In San Diego, there's one third party growing faster than the rest. We explore why. And something strange is happening at the busiest port of entry along the U.S.-Mexico border.
I can't believe it. It's incredible. It's good. It's good for everybody.
Border crossing wait times are plummeting at San Ysidro. We'll hear why. First, the news. This is Fronteras, the journalism project that brings you stories about the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the changing demographics along the Southwest. Fronteras is possible through the collaboration of several member stations. I'm Crystal Chavez. Something bizarre, even mind-altering, is happening at the busiest port of entry on the U.S.-Mexico border. It started about a week ago, and it hasn't let up. Jill Replicle from our Fronteras desk reports that it's changing lives and could, in fact, change the local economy.
From one day to the next, a city that's just 20 miles from San Diego got a couple of hours closer. For Efren Espinosa, who drives a white Ford pickup with tropical-themed seat covers, it got even closer.
4 hours and a half.
That's how long Espinosa waited once to cross the international border from Tijuana to San Diego. Espinosa makes the commute every day for work, but on this morning, it'll take him maybe 10 minutes to cross.
I can't believe it. It's incredible. It's good. It's good for everybody, especially for us that commute every day.
The time spent sitting on the Tijuana side of the San Ysidro border in hot cars for hours on end with exhaust pouring in the window and no bathroom in sight could be yesterday's nightmare. After several years of construction and lane closures, U.S. border authorities last week opened all existing lanes to northbound traffic. 25 lanes, most of them able to process two cars at a time.
We have seen a significant reduction in the wait times here at San Ysidro Port of Entry.
Sydney Aki is the port director at San Ysidro. Aki, like the business communities on both sides of the border, emphasizes the economic benefit of processing more travelers through the border faster. He cites a travel industry stat which estimates that every 33 visitors who enter the U.S. create one U.S. job.
That is huge with regards to, especially when you think about the amount and the volume of individuals actually crossing per day, anywhere from 125,000 to 130,000 individuals per day. Do the multiplication, that's a lot of jobs, a lot of commerce building here in our area.
Longtime border residents remember the days when the U.S.-Mexico border was typically a minor inconvenience. San Diegans would travel south to Puerto Nuevo to eat lobster on the weekends. Tijuanenses would come north for a quick shopping trip to Mission Valley. But that changed after terrorists took down the Twin Towers. Security became the top border priority, and the lines to cross into the U.S. got longer and longer. A 2005 study from the San Diego Association of Governments found that more than 3 million potential working hours were spent instead waiting in line at the border. And San Diego was losing out on some $2 billion annually. Now the border as minor instead of major inconvenience might be back. Paola Avila, who heads the Mexico Business Center at the San Diego Regional Chamber of Commerce, is ecstatic.
Thrilled. I feel like it's Christmas. Honestly, it's a game changer for our region.
Avila admits that Baja still has an image problem because of heightened violence there in years past. But at least now,
you can also go and come back, you know, within a normal average time that it would take you to go, say, to North County for dinner.
Back at the border, Javier Martinez hawks crispy wheels of sweet fried goodness called buñuelos to drivers queuing up to cross into the U.S. Vendors like Martinez, and there are hundreds of them, are not so happy about the improvements at San Ysidro. Sales are tough right now, Martinez says. People don't get hungry or thirsty when the lines are so short. On the other hand, some customers might find themselves with so much extra time that they're willing to enjoy a leisurely meal at the border before they cross. Robert Sayens pulls up behind a burrito cart in the middle of a now empty expanse of asphalt, only about 50 yards from the U.S. inspection booths. He's on his way to work at a jewelry store on the U.S. side of the border.
I used to beeline here like at almost three and a half hours. So right now I'm so happy, you know, I can enjoy my burrito right now. I can go have it more relaxed and have more time.
Science is also excited about the gas money he's going to save not idling in line and the stress he's going to avoid. But he's not ready to change up his habit of leaving for work 3 hours ahead of time.
I don't want to trust because you don't know what happened the next day. I don't want to have problems in my work.
Just in case the short line trend doesn't hold. In San Diego, I'm Jill Replogle.
Mexico is scouting for help from American oil companies as it opens its energy sector to foreign participation for the first time since 1938. At the same time, several U.S. companies are looking to Mexico to replace China as the industry's principal supplier of the massive pipelines that send the oil to market. Lauren Madelon reports on a new partnership between two towns and two countries that want to harness geography and oil industry experience for each other's benefit.
It was once unthinkable, Mexico partnering with foreign oil interests to rescue an underperforming energy sector. That was before Enrique Peña Nieto was elected president in 2012.
A toda la zona fronteriza.
Peña came to Ojinaga 10 months ago. He pointed across the Rio Grande and said, we'll create a manufacturing and transport hub here to service the U.S. market. Fast forward to today. Mexico's passed a bitterly contested constitutional amendment that Peña pushed, allowing foreign participation in the energy sector. The manufacturing hub Peña envisioned is being built to service the oil industry in both countries.
And so it was a great opportunity.
Enter David Turner, mayor of Odessa, Texas, a burgeoning place in the middle of the nation's highest producing oil field.
This is the start of a relationship.
We followed Turner in Mexico as he met technocrats and politicians like Ojinaga Mayor Miguel Carrion.
They got all the experience we don't have.
Unlike southern Mexico, oil's a new undertaking in the borderlands.
They don't know anything about the petroleum industry. You're not going to find a better city than Odessa to partner with.
Turner was shopping American expertise. Odessa's been an oil town for 90 years. Companies there represent a who's who of American oil. But he was also doing some shopping of his own.
The quality's not there from China.
Turner says many energy companies no longer rely on China.
Well, some of the pipe that we've received from China is just not up to snuff. They're 5,000 feet down, a piece of pipe breaks, and that could cost them $100,000 to recover that piece of pipe. What we see out of Mexico is quality products, quality pipe. They're using all digital equipment. It just seems like a perfect match.
Especially given the rising cost of transportation, says Mayor Carrion.
Chinese, how many miles is Chinese from here? And we got 200, 300 miles from Odessa. You need to cross the ocean Pacific to get to China. You only have to drive a couple miles to be in Odessa.
And that's just geography. But rising wages in China and transportation costs from Asia also work in Mexico's favor.
Mexico lost all these border jobs to China.
In the case of oil, energy analyst Tom Jacobs says Mexico's location and its emerging partnerships with U.S. oil companies should bring at least some of those jobs back.
It's a win-win situation. I mean, we've got all this expertise, and with the Constitution changing, they're going to have a more business-friendly government rather than crony capitalists.
Analysts estimate the entry of foreign oil expertise will boost Mexico's production by 75% within 25 years. They'd previously forecast a steady decline. The Ojinaga-Odessa partnership is an attempt by both to benefit in Mexico's new regulatory environment. I'm Lorne Madelon in Ojinaga, Chihuahua.
More Fronteras coming up. Fall is in the air and many are looking forward to cooler temperatures. Meteorologists are looking at a developing El Niño weather pattern and predict it could help Texas out with the drought.
Most of Texas should be a little wetter and a little cooler than we would normally be.
Stay tuned. This is Fronteras. I'm Crystal Chavez. A growing number of San Diego voters are opting against joining the country's major political parties. Reporter Jill Replegal looked into this trend among newly nationalized citizens. She found one third party that's growing faster than all the rest.
Here at Golden Hall in downtown San Diego, nearly 500 people from 63 different countries are becoming U.S. citizens.
Hong Kong.
The Registrar of Voters hopes that after they take their oath, they'll sign up to vote.
We have an election in November 4th. Don't forget to get your voter registration cards.
Along with their name and driver license number, new voters will be asked to check a box next to the political party they prefer. Or they can mark no party preference.
We get a lot of questions about, how do I sign up to be a nonpartisan or independent?
Carmen Lopez coordinates voter outreach for the San Diego County Registrar of Voters. The number of voters who decline to state a political party is rapidly approaching that of the Republican Party and the Democratic Party in San Diego. But the third largest political party in the county, and one that's growing fast, is the American Independent Party. 3.4% of all San Diego voters are registered as American Independents, and it's popular among new citizens.
And send our answer to the tyranny that clanks its chains upon the South.
The party was founded in 1967 to support presidential candidate George Wallace. Wallace is best known for his support of states' rights and a segregated South.
Before the feet of tyranny, and I say segregation now, segregation tomorrow, and segregation forever.
The American Independent Party has since dropped segregation from its platform. It now calls for limited government and strict control of our borders. The party is against gay marriage and abortion. It could be that all of the party's recent growth comes from California voters who are genuinely attracted by its conservative platform. But among those who register new voters, there's a different theory. Many are just confused by the party name, they say. Carmen Lopez says that's especially true among newly naturalized citizens, especially those from Asian countries.
That comes up a lot. American Independent, does that mean we're independent, but actually it is a party? I think, they're just very proud. They want to be part of the American, and they seem to hone in on that name. So
it's not just new citizens who make the mistake. Notable Californians who have said they accidentally signed up as American Independents include the wife of Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom, San Diego County Supervisor Dave Roberts, and a certain colleague of mine here at KPBS. She was just 18 at the time. Party execs admit there may be some confusion. Markham Robinson heads the American Independent Party's executive committee.
Yes, there are some such confused people, but every time people have tried to point this out, the attention drawn to the American Independent Party has resulted in an increase in our registration. Many Republicans, a handful of Libertarians, and many independents, that is, no party, would really find a much happier home in the American Independent Party.
Employees of the registrar's office just try to make sure new citizen voters know what they're signing up for. Carmen Lopez says they hit all the new citizen ceremonies. Today, bilingual employees offer help in Spanish, Tagalog, and Mandarin. Jason Wu from the registrar's office talks through the form with Jennifer Walker. I asked her if she signed up with a political party.
No preference.
She hasn't familiar with all the parties, so she decided with no preference, no party preference at this time.
And do you plan to vote in November?
Yes, I will. Yeah, yeah. Because I'm American citizen.
In San Diego, I'm Jill Replogle.
Fall is here, and many are looking forward to cooler temperatures. Meteorologists are looking at a developing El Niño weather pattern and predict it could help Texas out when it comes to drought. Dan Robertson is a meteorologist with Time Warner Cable News for San Antonio and Austin. We turn to him to tell us what El Niño could mean for us.
Well, we have been looking at a developing El Nino situation. Of course, El Nino is warm sea surface temperatures across the equatorial Pacific, and it has a very large impact on North American weather patterns. What we've been seeing is that, and what's been predicted, is that the El Nino will intensify. Still not a strong El Nino, but enough to alter our weather patterns here in South Central Texas pretty significantly. Our outlook for the fall and through the next 3 months shows that most of Texas should be a little wetter and a little cooler than we would normally be, and that's certainly good news, as much as South Texas continues to be in a fairly serious drought.
Right. The drought has lasted years. How much of Texas is still in some stage of drought?
Well, we've certainly improved from a couple of years ago, where as much as 70 or 80% of the state was in not just drought, but extreme or even exceptional drought. But we currently stand, as of the last week, at about 82% of the state is in at least abnormally dry or moderate drought. The amount of the state that is in exceptional drought now, which is the worst, has dropped below 2%. So there's certainly been some improvement. Now, that's not necessarily the case everywhere, especially in the Hill Country, South Central Texas, down around San Antonio. Those areas are still in the classification of severe drought, with parts of the Southern Hill Country still being in extreme drought. And the city of San Antonio is currently about 6 inches behind for the calendar year on rainfall.
Well, some people might be hearing this and thinking, are we ever really going to get out of this drought?
Well, you know, what we've been saying in meteorological circles over the last, you know, almost a decade now is that drought is more or less the new normal in Texas. While we'll see certainly some improvements in the extreme drought that we've seen in the last few years, most of meteorologists that are looking long-term agree that drought is going to be fairly persistent across the state for the foreseeable future.
What about the state of our lakes? I know we've been talking about how they're not 100% full and nowhere near close. What is the state of the lakes in the Lone Star State?
Well, surface water in the state of Texas is still a significant problem. Parts of East Texas have seen a lot of improvement, but there are parts of West Texas, especially as you go north towards Abilene and Lubbock, where they are still in exceptional drought, and many of the surface water supplies up there have dried up completely. So it all depends on your location, really. You know, much of the area east of I-35 has seen a lot of improvement, but the Highland Lakes chain, most of the lakes across West Texas are still in a pretty serious situation, and unless there's significant rainfall out of this El Nino event, they're liable to stay in a poor situation for a while.
Let's cross our fingers that El Nino will help us out. That was Dan Robertson, meteorologist with Time Warner Cable News for San Antonio and Austin. You know, here on Fronteras, we tend to focus on borders and life here on Earth. But let's take a look at another frontier. Scientists are still finding planets in other parts of the galaxy. So far, they've discovered around 2,000 exoplanets. Their luck hasn't been as good with exomoons. As part of KERA's Breakthroughs Project, Lauren Silverman reports on how researchers at UT Arlington will use a new approach, think radio waves, to locate moons many light years away.
Both Star Wars and Avatar feature civilizations on moons.
Pandora is one of many moons orbiting the planet Polyphemus, a gas giant planet the size of Saturn.
Scientists are certain exomoons are out there, but so far they've been unable to gather concrete evidence. While NASA's space telescope Kepler has helped find exoplanets dozens of light years away, UT Arlington's Zisla Muselak doesn't think the telescope is powerful enough to locate the smaller exomoons. So he's come up with another way.
By actually looking at the radio waves coming from different stars.
Yep, the plan is to measure radio waves with a radio telescope. Of course, radio waves are used all the time to send information. Think phone calls and TV. But this is the first time scientists are considering using radio waves to locate moons orbiting planets far away. Scientists know there are detectable radio emissions between Jupiter and its moon Io. Muselak and his colleague will search for those same radio emissions beyond our solar system, keeping Jupiter and Io in mind.
If you didn't see Io, you could conclude that Io is there because of the radio emissions. So this is pretty much the whole idea, how to extrapolate this from the solar system to the outer systems.
Muselich says if they can locate these telltale radio emissions, they'll have evidence of exomoons.
And then maybe there's an exomoon which is bigger than our moon, big enough to have an atmosphere, and as a result, civilization could develop there. You know, there could be humans there, or who knows what.
The whole thing might sound far-fetched, but Harvard astrophysicist David Kipping is intrigued.
I think it's a great idea. It's very inventive.
Now, Kipping is also competing in the race to locate exomoons. He's using information from the Kepler telescope.
I actually think a bit of competition is a healthy thing, and ultimately that the more tricks we have in our toolbox to discover exomoons, then the sooner we will force them out of hiding, I think.
There is an obstacle to detecting exomoons with radio waves, Kipping says. It's distance. The technique is estimated to work for planets and stars only within about 15 light years from the Earth.
It sounds like a huge number, but remember the galaxy is about 100,000 light years across, so 15 light years is quite close. There's only about 50 stars that close to us. So it's only sort of the very, very closest stars and planets for which we could go about and use this technique.
The UT Arlington researchers have submitted a request to test their technique using the largest radio telescope in the world. It's located far from North Texas in the Netherlands, but it could get them closer to a few exomoons. Lauren Silverman, KERA News.
That's it for Fronteras, a collaboration of public radio stations along the Southwest. Charanga Cakewalk composed this theme music. You can find the entire audio for Fronteras programs at tpr.org. I'm Texas Public Radio's Crystal Chavez in San Antonio. Until next week.